Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. It has been an article of faith with these monsters in the Bush crime family that the United States does not torture. In fact, Bush and Cheney have said that our interrogations of people who were swept up in operations that God only knows where the motive to sweep them up came from, those interrogations never involved torture. On September 6, 2006, according to Bob Woodward, writing in the Washington Post today, Bush said, "The United States does not torture. It's against our laws and it's against our values." In an interview last week with the Weekly Standard, a right-wing rag, Cheney said, quote, "And I think on the left wing of the Democratic Party, there are some people who believe that we really tortured," end quote. Well, the top Bush administration official in charge, the woman who is in charge of deciding whether or not a prosecution by the U.S. military goes forward, whether or not to bring a Guantanamo Bay detainee to trial, that top Bush administration official has concluded that the U.S. military did in fact torture a Saudi national who allegedly planned to participate in the September 11th, 2001 attacks, the so-called 20th hijacker, interrogating him with techniques that left him, in her words, a life-threatening condition, end quote. Her name is Susan Crawford, and in her first interview since being named the convening authority of military commissions by Defense Secretary Robert Gates in February of last 07, Ms. Crawford said, quote, "We tortured Mohammed al-Qahtani. His treatment met the legal definition of torture, and that's why I did not refer the case for prosecution," end quote. Now, for you right-wing, mouth-breathing Republican bastards out there, Ms. Crawford is a retired judge who served as general counsel for the Army during the Reagan administration, and she was a Pentagon inspector general when Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense. She is the first senior Bush administration official responsible for reviewing practices at our torture chambers in Guantanamo to publicly state that a detainee was, in fact, tortured. She said in her conclusion that the combination of the interrogation techniques, their duration, and the impact on this particular man's health led to her conclusion. She said, quote, "The techniques they used were all authorized, but the manner in which they applied them was overly aggressive and too persistent. You think of torture, you think of some horrendous physical act done to an individual. This was not any one particular act. This was a combination of things that had a medical impact on him that hurt his health. It was abusive and uncalled for and coercive, clearly coercive. It was that medical impact that pushed me over the edge to call it torture," she said. Now, a military prosecutor said a couple of months ago that they would seek to refile charges against Qahtani based on subsequent interrogations that did not employ harsh techniques. Oh, that's great. That's great. What kind of a rat bastard, mind-bred, brain-dead freak says something like that? Oh, a military prosecutor. Okay. Well, we didn't torture him this time. We tortured him over the course of months and months and months, but not this time. All we had to do was step into a cell and hold up some of the torture devices and say, "Would you like to answer questions?" And you know what? Son of a bitch, if he didn't fall down in a puddle of his own feces and urine and confess to everything that we told him to confess to. And we didn't torture him that time. The interrogation was so intense that Qahtani had to be hospitalized twice at Guantanamo with bradycardia. It's a condition in which the heart rate falls below 60 beats a minute and which in extreme cases can lead to heart failure and death. At one point, Qahtani's heart rate dropped to 35 beats a minute, according to the medical records that were kept on this man. Ms. Crawford said, quote, I sympathize with the intelligence gatherers in those days after 9/11, not knowing what was coming next and trying to gain information to keep us safe. Oh, and Crawford, by the way, according to Bob Woodward, is a lifelong Republican. She goes on, but there still has to be a line that we do not cross. And unfortunately, what this has done, I think, has tainted everything going forward. So I realize this is not news to you, Truth Seeker. It is damn sure not news to me. What makes this a news item covered by no less than a Bob Woodward in the Washington Post today? What makes it a news item is that this is the first Bush crime family member to publicly identify the techniques we use as torture. Now, when she says, I sympathize with the intelligence gatherers in those days after 9/11, not knowing what was coming next and trying to gain information to keep us safe. When was Khatani captured or swept up and tortured? When was Sheikh Khalid Mohammed swept up and tortured? Wasn't it years after Bush and his crime family allowed the United States to be attacked and 3,000 people dead on our soil? Crawford said, after personally reviewing Khatani's interrogation records and other military documents, quote, for 160 days, his only contact was with the interrogators. What is that, 6 months? 48 of 54 consecutive days of 18 to 20-hour interrogations. Insults to his mother and sister. He was told that his mother and sister were whores. With a leash tied to his chains, he was led around the room and forced to perform a series of dog tricks. He was beaten. He was shocked. He was waterboarded. He wound up in the hospital twice. Bush and Cheney have got to be put on trial. They have to be put on trial. And as someone said, to the extent that Barack Obama stands in the way of an investigation, a commission, action against these sons of bitches, to that extent, Barack Obama becomes an accessory after the fact, which in most criminal cases is a punishable criminal felony. Barack Obama needs to get on with the business of trying to repair the damage in this country and standing out of the way of justice. Just remove yourself, Mr. President-elect. Get out of the way. You don't have to do anything. But if you prevent justice from being used, then you become complicit. There's no doubt about this. I don't give a goddamn how many dinners he goes to with how many conservatives, how many liberals, how many preachers he appoints offer up their prayers to some cloud being at the inauguration. That doesn't matter. The only thing that matters right now in the history of this country is whether or not Barack Obama, in fulfilling his oath that he will take on next Monday, or Tuesday, whenever the hell it is, that when he takes that oath, he's serious. If he's not, then get the hell away, Mr. Obama. You don't deserve the office.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Now, obviously, I'm not going to go down each and every case of illegal detention and the torture and the violation of every single human rights law or treaty, the U.S. Constitution, that the Bush crime family has perpetrated in Guantanamo, in Diego Garcia, below the decks of U.S. warships, out in international waters, in Bahrain, in Damascus, in Cairo. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. I don't think we will ever understand how completely George W. Bush and Dick Cheney have put this country in dire jeopardy. We have tortured and murdered and butchered more people under the Bush-Cheney watch than at any time that I can think of other than the war in Vietnam in our history, where an illegal attack against other people has been engineered by the U.S. government. Here, I mean, it's astonishing. It's just astonishing the laws that have been violated. Now, here's another one. A 21-year-old citizen of Chad who's been held for 7 years in Guantanamo. That means he was picked up when he was 14. Has to be released. That's according to a federal judge who ruled today. The judge said, Richard Leon said, the government had not proven that Mohammed Al-Gharani was an enemy combatant, and the detainee must be freed and sent home, either to Saudi Arabia, where he was raised and his family lives, or Chad. Now, you've got to understand something. Since Obama's election in November, federal judges have speeded up the case-by-case reviews of about 200 detainees' challenges. Through their lawyers, they've made challenges. That's in the wake of that landmark Supreme Court ruling in June that gave Guantanamo Bay prisoners the right to challenge their confinement. This kid, Gharani, was arrested in Pakistan in 2001, taken to Guantanamo in early 2002. The U.S. government, the Bush crime family, had said that the 14-year-old had stayed in an al-Qaeda-affiliated guest house in Afghanistan, had fought in the Battle of Tora Bora, had served as a courier for senior al-Qaeda operatives, and was a member of a London-based al-Qaeda cell. Pretty goddamn long list for a 14-year-old, wouldn't you say? But the judge said the government could not prove any of the allegations. The judge said that the Bush crime family relied mainly on information from two other detainees at Guantanamo whose reliability and credibility was questionable, maybe because they were being tortured too. Judge Leon said in a ruling from the bench, quote, the government's evidence was a mosaic of allegations the government has failed to establish, that petitioner Al-Gharani was part of or supporting Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, simply stated, the judge said, a mosaic of tiles bearing images this murky reveals nothing about the petitioner with sufficient clarity that can be relied upon by this court. The 21-year-old listened to the ruling via telephone hookup. He did not make any comments, but the attorney representing him in Washington called the ruling, quote, a fantastic result, end quote. Zachary Katz Nelson, legal director at Reprieve, which is a London-based nonprofit group representing about 30 of these people in Guantanamo, said, quote, Judge Leon did justice today, end quote. Katz Nelson said, quote, this is an innocent kid, 14 years old, who was seized illegally by the Pakistanis. He never should have been seized in the first place. He spent one-third of his life in Guantanamo, end quote. There are about 250 other people still remaining in Dick Cheney and George Bush's torture chambers. Most have been held there for years, no charges. And many have complained of, quote, abuse, end quote. But Dick Cheney and George Bush, no, we don't torture. Nah, we don't torture. Well, you know, that communist, socialist, Marxist, left-wing thug, Bob Woodward at the Washington Post, has the audacity to get into work in cohort with this other left-wing, communist, Marxist, America-hating thug judge, or not judge, but Susan Crawford, who was appointed by that other left-wing, communist, Marxist, America-hating thug, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, and all come to the conclusion that George Bush and Dick Cheney are goddamned liars. And they did authorize and order torture, and they knew about it. And they watched the tapes, and they talked about it in the Oval Office. What did Bill Clinton do in the Oval Office? Oh, that's right. I almost forgot. And he was impeached. Well, let's take a break so I can calm down. Start the music.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 25 before the hour. Email here from Mike in St. Paul. Who, right? Yeah.
Hey, honey, I'm sitting right across the glass from you, and I just know this is a sensitive subject, but you've got to calm down a little bit. You're turning red in there. I fear for your blood pressure.
Okay.
And the tiny veins in your head.
Well, that's true. The ones that may go...
Exactly, yeah. Like so many Rice Krispies.
Yeah, okay. Okay. You know, when your spouse speaks, I just can't stand this. I can't stand this. Here are two, honest to God, I didn't live in Europe or Germany or Nuremberg or, you know, when actual war criminals were put on trial and people who had made monstrous decisions for the country of Germany, horrific decisions. It resulted in what was the death toll of World War II? 100 million people, 80 million, whatever. So I'm not used to living in a country or even seeing on television people who are bona fide, honest to God, war criminals. Now, I realize that Lyndon Johnson ordered some stuff in Vietnam that could only be considered war crimes, that Oliver North and John Poindexter ordered stuff in Central America that were, in fact, war crimes, and that because Ronald Reagan had taken an oath, he was as guilty as North in committing crimes against humanity. I understand. I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention back then. And I don't remember Reagan or Johnson parading themselves around in television, giving exit interviews about how their administrations were such sterling examples of good leadership, the way these two filthy sons of bitches are doing. But to know without a doubt, I mean, we can make the case that Reagan was lied to. We can make the case that Lyndon Johnson was lied to. I mean, we can. We can make the case in both of those instances. But you can't do that with Bush and Cheney. They knew. They ordered it. They had discussions in the Oval Office. See, here I go again. I'm sorry. So we have two real war criminals. Since they're not going to be put on trial for the crimes against humanity in this country, that will never happen. I don't care. Maybe if there are investigations, it doesn't make any difference. We will not. We are not at that level yet in this country where we will hold people that accountable. We simply won't do it. So what I'm hoping, I don't care. If Dennis Kucinich was the president, it wouldn't happen. It simply would not. What's his name? Ralph Nader. If Cynthia McKinney were president, it would not happen. We're not there. So the only thing I hope for is that these people eventually will be picked up when they're traveling or arrested and put on trial somewhere. And that's not going to happen either. You know this as well as I do. So these sons of bitches are going to walk free. And I think that's what makes me so enraged. If I knew that justice would prevail on some level, but it's not going to. It's not going to. Mike in St. Paul, referring to these exit interviews, especially by the moron, Mike writes, Mike, looks like W is hanging his presidency's hat on his preventing another attack after 9/11. But Mike, why isn't the monkey blamed for 9/11 itself? Putting aside all the theories that point to Bush being complicit in the attack, we do know for a fact that no National Security Council meeting was held by the Bush administration before the attack. So at the very least, W was grossly, grossly negligent in that his incompetence, his failure to hold NSC meetings before the attack, approximately caused the attack. If you don't believe me, read Richard Clark's book. Why isn't W held accountable for 9/11? I've never understood this, Mike. The fact that he is framing his legacy on preventing attacks on what he calls the homeland adds insult to injury. And Mike adds, just to follow up, we should never forget that we had an FBI field agent here in Minnesota who did connect the dots before 9/11. She arrested a man named Zacharias Massawi on suspicion of terrorism. Remember him? Because he was taking flight lessons, but only requested to learn how to take off, not land. Had Bush held NSC meetings, had Bush been engaged and asked for a report of any suspicious activity from the field offices, W could have done this after he got the memo that stated Bin Laden determined to attack in the U.S. I mean, come on! Clearly, Bush was grossly negligent here. Why doesn't he get blamed? He doesn't get blamed because, to a great extent, this country is controlled by neoconservatives. Media in this country has been totally prostituted. No offense to sex workers, with a few glaring exceptions. Totally prostituted. Right-wing media and neocon right-wing media, which is 90% of talk radio, is thoroughly, thoroughly dedicated to Nazism, to an American brand of fascism, thoroughly dedicated. And they don't give a goddamn what lies are told on their programs, what lies they propagate. They don't care. They're above the fray. They don't have to get down here like you and I do. They don't give a tinker's damn about any of this stuff. So they're more than willing, except what they do give a damn about is preserving the reputation of the neocons, the Republican Party, the right-wingers, George Bush and Dick Cheney, who have now put this country and every citizen in this country at more risk, in more danger than at any time in our history. At any time in our history. So for Bush and Cheney, these filthy pigs, to be walking around talking about how, we prevented any further attack. So they're going to wait. You know they're going to wait? They're going to wait until we are attacked again. And there will be an effort made to attack us again. You know that as well as I do. Bush and Cheney have spent 8 years cultivating a veritable army of people who hate us, hate any American. They don't differentiate between Bush and Cheney and you or me. There's no differentiation. We are Americans. We allowed this son of a bitch. We didn't remove him from office by any means necessary. We didn't do that. That's how the rest of the world, the people who hate us, look at us. You, filthy Americans, you have done this to us. You've violated our holy places. You've invaded our countries. You've tortured our people. And you've allowed your leadership to do this. We are coming to you. Only this time it's not a joke. That's what Bush and Cheney have done. and there's going to be no effort made. Ever. Count on it. And liberals, left-wingers, don't get your bloomers in a wad when Barack Obama does nothing. Because you can scream and rant and rave and pound your fists on the floor and bash your head against the wall, but nothing is going to happen regarding the criminality of these two. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And their crime family, their extended crime family. Nothing. 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 This is what, this is the payoff. This is what the United States of America gets shoved in its face for allowing this regime to take power. On December 13th, 2000, there should have been 10 million people in the streets of America saying, no, goddammit, Supreme Court, you are not going to stop the vote count in Florida. But we didn't. We didn't do that. So here's our payback. Here's our karma. Here's our balance. Here is our Newtonian second law, our first law of motion. For every action, reaction, yada, yada, yada. Here it is. And you and I and our kids and grandkids to going forward, how many generations, who knows, are going to live under this threat? Because it will come. It will come. There are people on this planet, not us. We have no historical memory. We're 230 years old. And most Americans can't tell you what happened 10 years ago. But in other parts of the world, the historical memory goes back a millennium or two. They're still discussing things and arguing and fighting about crap that happened 700 years ago in the Middle East. In Eastern Europe. All over the planet. Just because you and I can't think back beyond 10 years and have no historical memory, not you, not me, but you know what I'm talking about. That means nothing. The rest of the world does do that. And this is what Bush and Cheney, this is their legacy. This is what they've done to us. Forget every instrument of government that they have corrupted, polluted, and destroyed. Forget all that. Just this one thing, this violation. This violation of the law on a scale really and truly unknown in previous administrations, this is what's going to come back and bite us on the ass and the legs and the arms and the head and the neck and the heart and the soul until finally, finally, somebody says enough, justice now prevails.
Get your range on. It's Mike Malloy.
After the break at the top of the hour, we're going to focus again on slaughter of innocents in Gaza. I watched Brian Williams and Charles Gibson tonight, both NBC and ABC, how they would report on the murder of innocents in that sad strip of country, Gaza. Brian Williams at NBC spent 22 seconds on the murder going on in Gaza. 22 seconds. And it was paired with the Bin Laden story. You see how that works? The Gazans and Bin Laden. 22 seconds. In that 22 seconds, he said that the death count of people in Gaza has now gone over 1,000. And then he said this, and the dead, by the way, include 315 children. That's how he put it. Oh, and the dead, by the way, include 315 children. I don't think I have ever seen Brian Williams before in the light that I saw him tonight, as a cold-blooded son of a bitch who has no more courage than a cockroach. The death toll in Gaza is now over 1,000, and the dead, by the way, include 315 children. Charles Gibson gave the story 15 seconds, and he also paired it with the Bin Laden video. And Charles Gibson, being the filthy son of a bitch that he is, didn't even mention that a third of the deaths are children. Didn't even mention it. Didn't even give it a, oh, by the way, the dead include 315 children. Didn't even say it. And then some unconscionable son of a bitch sent me an email this evening with about 10 or 11 political cartoons, all skewed against Hamas. I have no use for Hamas. I have no use for the IDF. I don't have any use for any of this murder and mayhem. But the fact is that Israel feels it has to murder children? God damn! Somebody sent me an email with 10 or 12 political cartoons that depicted Hamas as hiding behind children, throwing children out for the Israeli rockets to hit. And the pig who sent me that stuff, and I don't know what the intent was, because there was no message. But I'll guarantee I won't get any email from that email addy ever again. 315 children. I would like to ask if I were, if the program, well, it is carried in Israel via the internet, but I would like to ask if any Israeli subjects, any Israeli citizens feel safer now knowing that 315 Palestinian children in Gaza have been murdered. You feel safer, guys and girls? Do you really? Is that better for you now? Is that okay? Can you breathe a little bit better with those nasty-ass rockets who are hitting the desert in southern Israel? You know, the ones fired by Hamas? You feel better now? Is it okay? 315 dead children. Is that all right? And of the over 1,000 dead people who live in Gaza, the news reports from whoever's reporting, the Israeli press that is not totally whored out by the Likudniks, Al Jazeera, Reuters, the French news agency, the ones who can get in there, even though the Israeli government is keeping everyone out while they commit murder and mayhem, just like the U.S. military did in Fallujah, just like the Nazis did wherever they went in to butcher Jews. Keep the media out! The reports coming out say that of that over 1,000 dead, about 60 or 70% are civilians. That's a hell of a kill ratio, isn't it? But that's, you know, I guess collateral damage. You know, when you have to go into an urban area with missiles and tanks and rockets and bombs and phosphorus and all sorts of death and destruction. Well, hell, you know, people are going to be killed. That's just the way it goes. Al Jazeera's correspondent in Gaza said the situation for Gazans remain one of, quote, complete fear and terror. For those who venture out for food, they know that any time they leave their house, it could be the last time. More than 80,000 Palestinians have now fled their homes because of the fighting around them. There is a sense of overcrowding. UN schools have taken in 35,000 refugees. You know why? Because Gaza is walled off. Nobody can get out. It's a killing field. The Al Jazeera correspondent said there is real desperation and fear among the people. Mads Gilbert, a surgeon for the Norwegian Aid Committee, told Al Jazeera, quote, this is a man-made situation that affects mainly the civilian population of Gaza who are without protection. 13 Israelis have been killed so far, including 3 civilians and 10 soldiers. As the death toll continued to rise, according to Al Jazeera, diplomatic efforts to bring about a ceasefire appeared to make little progress. Ban Ki-moon, the UN Secretary General, arrived in Cairo earlier today in a bid to kickstart ceasefire negotiations between Hamas and Israel. The UN chief has not said whether he will have direct contact with Hamas leaders. Ban Ki-moon has repeatedly called for both sides to immediately end hostilities. And Robert Fisk. Oh, yeah, Robert Fisk. Well, I'll quote from him when we come back. Stay with us. And then Tom Friedman today in the New York Times. My God. Seven past the hour. Welcome back. So, Al Jazeera writing today about 80,000 Gazans forced to flee their homes because of the war against them by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, the government of Israel. The death toll now passes 1,000, 315 of which are children. 1,017 people have been killed, almost 5,000 injured, according to the head of the Palestinian Emergency Services. Anyway, Robert Fisk, I'm sure you're familiar with him. A journalist and Middle East expert, Brit, that we have quoted many times, who has a new book out that was just sent to me, courtesy of one of our listeners, entitled The Great War for Civilization, The Conquest of the Middle East. Is this new? Is this a new one? Because I know Fisk has written several books on the Middle East. And this is a monster. This is a huge, huge book. It's going to take me forever to read this. No, this is copyright 2005. He also, there's another one here, I'm reaching back, or another one, The Age of the Warrior, Selected Essays. Anyway, Robert Fisk, who is essentially a reporter, he's a news person for The Independent or The Guardian, one of the two, you don't have to tell me which one. But he was quoted today by Al Jazeera, saying that neither the current Gaza war nor the broader 60-year regional conflict will ever end without resolving, obviously, the Palestinian issue. I mean, that's kind of a given. Fisk then says, quote, why are they, the Palestinians, dispossessed? Why are settlements that are colonies for Jews and Jews only being built on Arab land illegally? And still it continues. He goes on to say, unless we deal with the Palestinian refugees, there will not be an end to this war. There might be a ceasefire in Gaza, a ceasefire in the West Bank, but there will not be an end to the war. That is the problem. Fisk, end quote. Fisk said that Israel is able to flout UN ceasefire demands as long as the U.S., the only country to abstain from that 15-member Security Council vote on the resolution, thanks to Ehud Olmert calling Bush and telling him to order Condoleezza Rice to shut the goddamn hell up. U.S. is the only member on the Security Council that continues to back Israel's aggression. Fisk said, quote, it is quite clear from Hillary Clinton's most recent comments that the U.S. backing of Israel will continue under Barack Obama. I see no change, he says. I see no hope at all in the future, end quote. And that is precisely the reason that unless violence of this nature breaks out, or not breaks out, that sounds like the measles, if violence of this scope, of this ugliness, is launched against the Gazans, the Palestinians, what are they doing? What are they doing to warrant this? What were the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto doing to warrant they're being surrounded? They're being forced through checkpoints. They're being allowed to leave, but you have to be back, and you better come back, or we'll kill your relatives in the ghetto. I mean, somebody please tell me the difference. I'm not, take the politics out of it. Just tell me the difference between the butchery of the Jews in Europe during World War II and the butchery of the Palestinians going on now at the hands of the Israelis. Somebody tell me the difference. I don't care about the politics anymore. I'm talking about 312 children murdered because they happen to live in Gaza. Because they happen to be Palestinians. And nobody in American media gives a goddamn. We'll pay any attention to this at all. Nobody. And this this will be the last bit of my whining about the poor Palestinians tonight, right? I got this from, well, the person didn't sign it, but Mike, just received this from Free Gaza. It says, this is on the Free Gaza, it's a ship, the emergency voyage to Gaza. It says, dear friends of Gaza, the Free Gaza Mercy Ship, Spirit of Humanity, Spirit of Humanity, left port in Cyprus this morning on an emergency mission to besiege Gaza. Aboard the ship are desperately needed medical supplies and 21 passengers and crew, including doctors, human rights workers, journalists, and two parliamentarians from Spain and Italy. We have just received word from the ship that they are surrounded by Israeli naval gunboats. The warships are demanding that the Spirit of Humanity return to Cyprus. We are insisting to reach Gaza and complete our peaceful mission. The Israelis have not yet attacked our unarmed ship, but it is urgent that everyone immediately call the Israeli government and demand that they stop threatening the Spirit of Humanity. And then there are phone numbers here for Mark Regev, the guy that we didn't quote him. We let him speak his own words the other night that Hamas did not break the truce. Mark Regev's phone number in the Prime Minister's office, Shlomo Dror, the Ministry of Defense, an Israeli naval spokesperson. So you can probably get these phone numbers by Googling Spirit of Humanity or Free Gaza, but nobody's going to call, so... Prairie 2 writes in, hey, Mike, the Bush crime family released one last fake Bin Laden tape today. I wonder if they made any tapes ahead to release in the future, like Elvis made records before he went into the army. Of course, to be in sync with current events, they'll have to be constructed with blanks to fill in dates and names like a voicemail box recording. Do you suppose anybody will notice Dick Cheney's voice filling in the blanks? Meanwhile, back at the New Republican Great Depression, the stock market dropped again. Amid more bad news from banks, the really bad news are reports of declining business inventory. That's not the really, really bad news. That would be that even with fire sale prices to clear the shelves, the length of time inventory is staying on hand is increasing. This will push more layoffs and closings, which makes people even more reluctant to buy, and the death spiral continues to pick up speed. There are a number of things the government should do to break the cycle, like increasing the minimum wage, Social Security payments, unemployment extensions, and increased welfare eligibility. So far, Obama hasn't expressed much interest in these things. but rather he is stressing infrastructure projects. Of course, building infrastructure without new trade policies will result in us just having new bridges to live under. Today's survival preparedness tip: have an axe and a saw on hand. You can use it to bust up the abandoned house next door for firewood. Oh, Prairie 2 has become such a cynic, hasn't he? I have counted, honest to God, this is not the least bit. As a matter of fact, it's underplayed. Probably 12 houses within half a mile of my house that are bank foreclosures. So, for your information, Prairie 2, we have several houses close at hand that we can take our axes and saws to. Tom Friedman's column in the New York Times today is astonishing, and we're going to focus on it when we come back after this break. So stick around. Both Glenn Greenwald at Salon and Fair and Accuracy in Reporting, fair.org, and other net writers have commented on what Friedman. I read it this morning over my morning Super Beans coffee and just about spit out a whole mouthful of good coffee. I cannot believe. I realize Tom Friedman is one of the leading propagandists in this country for the Iraq War. But what he wrote today was unbelievable. We'll share it when we come back.
A vision of two states, Israel and Palestine, living side by side in peace and in security.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, Tom Friedman, who never met an invasion or occupation or slaughter in Iraq that he didn't thoroughly approve of. And is a supporter of all of Israel's wars, has a column in the Times today explaining, and as Glenn Greenwald writes at Salon, explaining and praising the Israeli attack on Gaza. What Friedman does here explains that the 2006 Israeli invasion and bombing of Lebanon was, contrary to conventional wisdom, it was a great success. Now, to make his case, Friedman acknowledged that the deaths of innocent Lebanese civilians was not an unfortunate and undesirable byproduct of that war. It was not an unfortunate byproduct, but rather was a vital aspect of the Israeli strategy, the centerpiece, actually, of teaching Lebanese civilians a lesson they would not soon forget. This is what Friedman wrote. Israel's counter strategy was to use its air force to pummel Hezbollah. And while not directly targeting the Lebanese civilians with whom Hezbollah was intertwined, to inflict substantial property damage and collateral casualties on Lebanon at large. It was not pretty, but it was logical. Israel basically said that when dealing with a non-state actor, Hezbollah, nested among civilians, the only long-term source of deterrence was to exact enough pain on the civilians, the families, and employers of the militants to restrain Hezbollah in the future. Friedman goes on, Israel's military was not focused on the morning after the war in Lebanon, when Hezbollah declared victory and the Israeli press declared defeat. It was focused on the morning after, when all the real business happens in the Middle East. That's when Lebanese civilians, in anguish, said to Hezbollah, "What were you thinking? Look what destruction you have visited on our community. For what? For whom?" Friedman, that's end quote from the column. Friedman says he's unsure whether the current Israeli attack on Gaza is similarly designed to teach Palestinians the same lesson by inflicting, quote, heavy pain, end quote, on civilians. But Tom Friedman hopes that's the intent. This is what he writes, quote, "In Gaza, I still can't tell if Israel is trying to eradicate Hamas or trying to educate Hamas by inflicting a heavy death toll on Hamas militants and heavy pain on the Gaza population. If it is out to destroy Hamas, casualties will be horrific, and the aftermath could be Somalia-like chaos. If it is out to educate Hamas, Israel may have achieved its aims." End quote. Educating Hamas means killing as many innocent civilians as possible. And this son of a bitch, Tom Friedman, in the New York Times, is applauding this. Now, as Glenn Greenwald in Salon points out, the war strategy that Friedman is applauding, what he explicitly describes as, quote, "exacting enough pain on civilians," end quote, in order to teach him a lesson, is about as definitive of a war crime as it gets. It also happens to be a classic textbook definition of terrorism. Huh? Here's how the U.S. Department of State defined terrorism in its 2001 publication, Patterns of Global Terrorism. You ready? Quote, "No one definition of terrorism has gained universal acceptance. For the purpose of this report, however, we have chosen the definition of terrorism contained in Title 22 of the United States Code, Section 2656F. That statute contains the following definitions. The term terrorism means premeditated, politically motivated violence perpetrated against noncombatant targets by subnational groups or clandestine agents, usually intended to influence an audience. For purpose of this definition, the term noncombatant is interpreted to include, in addition to civilians, military personnel who at the time of the incident are unarmed and or not on duty," end quote. That's our definition, you see, of terrorism. Now, other than the fact that Friedman is advocating these actions for an actual state rather than a subnational group, can anyone identify any difference between A, what Friedman approvingly claims was done to the Lebanese, and what he advocates be done to Palestinians, and B, what the State Department formally defines as terrorism? Isn't Friedman's logic, as a matter of fact, exactly the rationale used by Al-Qaeda? We're going to inflict civilian pain on Americans so that they stop supporting their government's domination of our land, and so their government thinks twice about bombing more Muslim countries. Isn't that also exactly the same logic that fuels the rockets from Hezbollah and Hamas into Israel? Yes, yes, and yes. This place is so good, dark. I do not feel the romance. I do not catch the spark.
Peace and security in our world is the willingness of free nations to retain aggression and evil by force.
To retain aggression and evil by force. Yeah, I think you're right. So that was Friedman's column today, which was just astonishing to read. I don't know. Interestingly, I only had a couple of people email me. I mean, literally one or two. The information from fair.org came from fair.org, and the Greenwald story, salon.com, that came from, I guess it came from, might have come from Reg. It came from a listener, but that's about it. Fair.org says the New York Times has developed certain rules and guidelines for its opinion columnists over the years. They are not permitted to endorse political candidates, and they are generally expected to refrain from criticizing one another by name in print. Other policies have been made clear in the past, as when liberal columnist Paul Krugman was instructed not to refer to George W. Bush as, quote, lying, unquote, during the 2000 campaign. Does the Times have a similar standard for columnists who endorse inflicting suffering on civilians? Or does the acceptability of advocating terrorism depend on who is being terrorized? Well, I guess the Times does not have a policy for columnists who endorse inflicting death and suffering on civilians. If they did have that policy, Friedman would not have written what he wrote. So the second question, does the acceptability of advocating terrorism depend on who is being terrorized? Yes, of course. Absolutely. If Iraqis are terrorized, collateral damage. Palestinians terrorized, collateral damage. Central Americans terrorized, collateral damage. You know, I mean, I'm not going to go down the list. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico says, quote, I think, or he emails in, I think the salient quote on Gaza these last few weeks is from Fintan O'Toole writing in the Irish Times, quote, when does the mandate of victimhood expire? At what point does the Nazi genocide of Europe's Jews cease to excuse the state of Israel from the demands of international law and of common humanity? End quote. Michael writes, both are questions, Mike, that Mr. Friedman and his cohort are loath to answer. So, you pay your money and you take your choice, right? MJ writes, Mike, I've been listening to you for some time. I watch news rarely, but I did read The Idiot Tom Friedman. I must say I'm speechless. I'm still trying to digest Congress voting for Israel to continue this madness. Oh, but they will all get together and celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. I can't even laugh it off anymore. I'm giving up. My husband is from South America. We plan to finish college and get the hell out of here. I can't support this. And the interesting thing, and once again, watch what happens on MLK's holiday. Nobody in mainstream media, there may be one or two. When I say nobody, it's not absolute. But it will come from the bloggers. It'll come from the web. But nobody is going to talk about what Martin Luther King was saying right before he was assassinated, about the greatest enemy of peace on earth had become his own country. He was making very pointed references to corporate America's lust for war and death and genocide. Nobody mentions that. They like that kind of infantilized Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You know, the one who gave the I Have a Dream speech, the one who organized the Montgomery bus boycott, the one who followed the teachings of Gandhi and believe in passive resistance, the one who wrote from the Birmingham jail, you know, the one who has been blurred around the edges. Oh, well, he was fighting for civil rights for black folks. And, of course, we all know what kind of rights Martin Luther King Jr. was fighting for and died for. But nobody will talk about that. Watch. It's coming. When's his birthday? Monday, Kathy? Roslyn. Well, I believe Ros has told me that she's Jewish. She writes from Canada. Hi, Mike. I'm as mad as you are, and I have high blood pressure, too, but I cannot remain neutral on this subject either. Tony Blair, the former British Prime Minister and now Special Envoy to the Middle East, was talking to Wolf Blitzer today. Not once did he say Israel was to blame for anything. Everything was the fault of Hamas, and I could have screamed when he repeated the lie that Hamas broke the ceasefire. They lie and lie and lie. He also said that Obama has great troubles awaiting him. How on earth can such a biased man be put in charge of trying to create a peace pact in the Middle East? They are demons in their loyalty to Israel for some strange reason. There is something going on that we are not privy to. Otherwise, everything wouldn't go this far and in Israel's favor. All the while, Blitzer was sitting there trying to maintain a serious look while asking the most stupid of questions. Thank God for those fair-minded Jews who speak out against what Israel is doing. Imagine how it will be when Netanyahu gets into power. If he does, you can say hello to World War III, because he is as mad as a March hare and chomping at the bit to kill all Palestinians and anybody else who gets in his way. Roz. Yeah, Netanyahu is like Ariel Sharon. Is Sharon still alive, still in a coma? I think he is. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. And apparently, Tom Hartman had some very interesting stuff on his program today. Bridget at fairywoodland.com writes, you know, our Bridget. Bridget writes, with credit to Tom Hartman, on whose show I heard this earlier today, and with no offense intended to Wiccans and other practitioners of the earth-based ways, Thomas Jefferson on the Reign of Witches. Jefferson said, this is in a letter to John Taylor, June 4, 1798, quote, a little patience and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true spirit, their true sight, restore their government to its true principles. It is true that in the meantime, we are suffering deeply in spirit and incurring the horrors of a war and long oppression of enormous public debt. And if we feel their power just sufficiently to hoop us together, it will be the happiest situation in which we can exist. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns, and then we shall take an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are at stake. Gosh, he's referring to George Bush and the Bush crime family, isn't he? And then Bob in Kentucky wrote this. He said, I hear this quote on Hartman's show, I think he meant today, from Theodore Roosevelt, circa 1912. Quote, we stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupations. The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions, but must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of a living, a standard high enough to make morality possible, to provide for education and recreation, to care for immature members of the family, to maintain the family during periods of sickness, and to permit a reasonable saving for old age. And then Bob writes, I wonder if the bozos who decided the minimum wage should be around $8 per hour ever tried to do the above on that amount of money. I don't mean to sound bitter, but... yeah, so Hartman must have had a hell of a program today. I wish I could hear Tom's program. But in order to hear his program, since I live in the Bohunkville of America, Atlanta, Georgia... well, not Atlanta, but, you know, this area. The only thing, if I'm a listener to talk radio, I can listen to Hannity Savage, Limbaugh, Bortz. And a couple other nutballs. I mean, absolute nutballs. But in order to hear Hartman's program, I would have to sit down in front of the computer all day. And sorry, Tom. I can't do it. But I appreciate the fact that people who listen to his program do pass on to me what he talks about occasionally. We'll be right back.
Go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
What else we got here? It's 10 before the hour. When we come back after the break, well, I still have a few more things to cover. You know, one of James Dobson buddies is going to conduct a inaugural prayer breakfast. Come on, Mike, try English. He is the pastor of Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in Dallas, Dr. Tony Evans. He is president of something called the Urban Alternative. He'll be a featured speaker at the inaugural prayer breakfast on Monday in D.C. He will also attend Tuesday's presidential inauguration of Obama. If you go to the website, just Google Dr. Tony Evans, and you'll find it all. He apparently is a good buddy of James Dobson. As a matter of fact, Dobson has an endorsement of this guy on Evans's website. One of his favorite quotes is, "God is not against government, but human government was established by his will and operates by his permission." You know, I'm a goddamn atheist. You know what I'm saying? I really am. And I know Barack Obama is going to put his hand on the Bible and take his oath and swear to God, "So help me God." Why not "so help me Allah"? Why not "so help me Vishnu"? Why not "so help me"? Who's the guy that wrote the watchmaker, the blind watchmaker? Yeah, why not "so help me Richard Dawkins"? Why not just leave it off altogether? Why not just say, "Yeah, I'll uphold the Constitution. Let's get on with it"? Why doesn't Barack Obama put his hand on the Vedas or the Quran Oh, I know. Because we are a Christian nation, and this is a Christian ceremony. But we are not, and it is not. But all these preachers, and now this guy. You know, the meeting, the dinner Brock had with the neocons, the Nazi bastards. I know, most of them were Jewish. Brooks, Krauthammer, Crystal. But they're still Nazi bastards, the neocons in this country. The other night in Chevy Chase, Maryland, pointed out the idea of hold your friends close and your enemies closer, if that's what that was all about. You know, and then, of course, I think he had a meeting today with some of the so-called liberal writers that write for mainstream media, as few as they are. E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post, I think, was there. But, you know, maybe Barack Obama has it exactly right. I don't know. I don't know what the hell's going on. I really don't. But maybe Barack Obama is smarter by half than what a lot of us think he really is. And most of us think he is very, 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 very bright, probably the smartest man to hold the office of president. Clinton was very smart, too, but for a long, 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 long time. And maybe he is way beyond whatever credit we still give him when we look at some of his cabinet nominees and some of his statements about not pursuing justice where it concerns Bush and Cheney. If that is the case, then what Obama is doing is a sheer stroke of genius. He is going right, like Daniel, going right into the lion's den and embracing these thugs, these people who have spent their entire, with the exception of Brooks, have spent most of their careers writing stuff to incite the population to a war fever for no reason ever. Krauthammer is a sick, sick man. Bill Kristol is beyond belief. Brooks, God help me, I sometimes find myself agreeing with what he writes about, but Brooks is not a neocon. He is more of your conventional conservative. And some of the points he makes are okay with me. But Obama is either way smarter than we think he is, and most of us think he is extremely brilliant, or he's being played. I cannot see Barack Obama, 47 years old, being played by these old white men. I can't do it. I don't care who the old white men are. Barack Obama, I don't think, is going to get played. If he's doing something in the 8 years that he'll be president, he will do it because, I think, of his decision, whether it's right or wrong. He's not going to be played by a bunch of old white people. It's not going to happen, especially not old white neocon conservative so-called opinion writers for these newspapers. It ain't going to happen. Obama is so slick, he will remove their socks without touching their shoes if they start to mess with him. And I think maybe, perhaps, possibly, that point was made at the dinner in Chevy Chase, Maryland last night. I think maybe these guys came out of there. I think Peggy Noonan was there. What a waste of human DNA she is. But there were so many of these right-wing thugs, America haters, who were there. And it's my understanding that when they came out, although, you know, this was completely off the record, nobody was supposed to say anything, that when they came out of there, it's my understanding, don't ask me my sources, I don't have any, I just pulled this out of the air, that these neocon thugs got the impression that maybe Barack Obama is somebody they can do business with, the same way Margaret Thatcher said Gorbachev was somebody she could do business with. I'm paraphrasing. But, so maybe that's the plan. But as far as all these preachers showing up to give all these Christian prayers, you know, get a couple of imams up there. Get a couple of Shinto priests. Get a Wiccan. How about an atheist? It's about 7 past the hour. I confused Roz in Canada with a couple of other listeners and email writers who are Jewish. Roz says, Mike, I'm a former Roman Catholic. Okay. Yeah. This from the Associated Press medical writer. International doctors called for an end to the violence in Gaza, saying hospitals were scenes of, quote, nightmarish havoc, end quote, in articles published Wednesday in the Lancet Medical Journal. In a special report detailing the human toll of the Gaza offensive, the Lancet said Gaza City's Al-Shifa Hospital asked for extra refrigeration equipment before the bodies of dead patients with severe wounds began decomposing. The hospital, which is Gaza's largest, reported its 585 beds were filled in the first week of the Israeli offensive. The Lancet cited the Ministry of Health in Gaza as saying that as of Monday, 292 children and 75 women have been killed in the offensive, with 1,497 children and 626 women wounded. Israeli defense officials acknowledge the military has loosened its rules of engagement during the current round of fighting to prevent the killing or capture of soldiers. Do you know what that means? You should. The rules of engagement that say, there have to be certain circumstances before you can open fire have been loosened. Why? So that Israeli soldiers are not killed or captured. So kill anything that moves that's in front of you. However, Israeli military officials note that Hamas fighters have worn civilian clothing while fighting Israeli troops, using schools, mosques, and crowded residential areas for cover, making it hard to keep ordinary residents out of harm's way. Oh, okay. Reacting to the Lancet articles, Israeli Cabinet Minister Isaac Herzog said his country has worked hard to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza throughout the fighting, and Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman Yigal Palmor sharply criticized one of the doctors quoted in The Lancet for, quote, spreading vicious lies, end quote. The World Health Organization declared that health services in Gaza were on the point of collapse, and UNICEF called the situation tragic and unacceptable. The International Committee of the Red Cross said the Israeli army has failed to evacuate the wounded. The Lancet said in an editorial, quote, the violence launched in Gaza is taking an unjustifiable toll on civilian populations. These actions contravene the Fourth Geneva Convention. That refers to the international agreement that civilians are to be protected in times of war. The Lancet also published a letter signed by more than 700 medical students calling for an end to the Gaza attacks. Norwegian doctors Mads Gilbert and Eric Fossey, who are working inside the Al-Shifa Hospital, described Gaza's health situation as, quote, nightmarish havoc, end quote, in the latest Lancet report. The pair have more than two decades of experience working in Gaza and other war zones. Gilbert and Fossey wrote that since arriving in Gaza on December 31st, they have, quote, witnessed the most horrific war injuries in men, women, and children of all ages in numbers almost too large to comprehend, end quote. Then it talks about the surgeries and how the operating rooms, they sometimes ask you use the light from cell phones to operate because the power has been blown to pieces. Doctors Gilbert and Fossey had no statistics on the types of surgeries being performed, but had participated in many amputations, including some triple amputations. They said that the killed and injured they have seen in the hospital have overwhelmingly been civilians. The Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman, Palmor, questioned the accuracy of the doctor's comments. Palmor said, Dr. Gilbert is notorious for his radical far-left opinions and his systematic demonization of Israel. He has already accused Israel of almost every nightmarish crime in the book, only to ignore the refutation of every one of his allegations, Palmor told the Associated Press. Palmore also said, quote, his stories are worthy of Dante's imagination and have proved time and again to be far removed from reality. All right, the phone number here is 800-989-1480 if you would like to call in and make a comment. Let's start up here with, let's go to line one. John, is either John Denver or John in Denver. I guess it can't be John Denver. He's like gone. John in Denver, listening on the internet. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
How much time do we have?
A couple minutes.
Well, thank you for voicing my anxiety. And I can't tell you what I don't understand why you're not national, but I guess I do, but it's just like, oh my God. Did you see Cheney on PBS tonight? I don't think you did.
No, I didn't. But I've heard reports of his insanity, yeah.
Well, no, this was like tonight. You have, it's like recent. He's on there with Jim Larry, you know, the former.
Yeah, yeah. I've had people who did see it email me and tell me some of his comments. So, no, I haven't seen it, but yeah, I'm aware of some of the things you said.
All right. Let's go to Palestine and the Palestinian. That is, Mike. I mean, I can tell you're like going nuts on it, and I am too. What I've got now, I've got Martin Buber on the internet, and they totally change it. Have you ever heard of a binational solution as opposed to a, I can't remember what the other one is. Binational as opposed to two state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets very complicated with Martin Buber because they make it complicated. I read years ago, back when I was 20 years old, Martin Buber said that the state of Israel rests on a false foundation because they failed to take into consideration the Palestinians, the people of Palestine. And then you got these people like, what's his name up in Oregon there? I'm actually going nuts over this.
Well, I understand. Who are you referring to? Are you referring to, Ron Wyden, the senator?
Michael Medved.
Oh, that freak? Bullshit. Oh, no, you can't say that. Can't say that, John. I'm sorry. John, I know you're listening on the internet, but, there are several words that we're just not allowed to say on the air. Don't ask me why, but that happens to be one of them. I appreciate what you were saying, and I'll take your call again sometime. But right now I have to bleep it out. And I'll tell you why. It's not so much you. It's not so much me. It's not so much this network. It's not so much the stations that carry this program. Most of the stations that carry this program are affiliated one way or another with television stations that carry cable movies, HBO, so on and so forth, where the language is totally unrestricted. A lot of people listen to this program, listen on Sirius or Nova M, where the language is totally unrestricted. But we're not. And what Nova M is afraid of, and so are the stations that carry my program, you know, we're still in the age of Bush and Cheney. And all it takes is $100,000 fine because one of our callers said one of the seven words that are not allowed. And, you know, the stations will drop this network and this program as fast as you can say the word that you said that we're not allowed to say on the air. So, John in Denver, I appreciate what you had to say. I totally agree with you. Totally agree with your use of adjectives, but or verbs. But I just have to let you go for tonight. Thanks, John. Michael is calling from the Bronx. Wait a minute. We have to take a break here. So we'll take the break, then we'll come back and pick up Michael in the Bronx. We have two open lines, 800-989-1480.
And maybe he'll find his place in heaven, because he might just die. Losing hope is easy when your only friend is gone, and every time you look around, well, it all just seems to change. But hanging on is easy when you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making sense at all. You're not the only one. change.
The representatives of the government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, represented respectively Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Mahmoud Abbas.
Oh my God. All right, back to your phone calls. Michael in the Bronx is calling, listening, of course, on the Internet. Why would we be on a station in New York, right? Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
You
how
know,
are you?
I hear that man's voice, and it's like, somebody, please put a sock in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot stand him anymore. I'm referring back to the press conference, and it's like, you know, when you hear him speak, the stuff that he says and the disgusting smirk on his face. You know, it made me think back to the Iraqi shoe thrower, and it's like, you know, you wish, damn it, he missed. Maybe he should have just clocked him upside his head and knocked him since. I'm talking direct hit. You know, just like that. And, you know, the thing is that he's got the nerve to say that his presidency, his administration did everything so well.
Yeah.
So well, you see the...
Well, but Michael, from look, this is an administration that has lied about everything. The way you could tell when Cheney or Bush were lying is to take a look, and if their mouths were moving and sound waves were coming out, they were lying. So why should you or I or anybody expect that at the very end of this reign of terror, these two thugs would tell the truth about anything? What they're trying to do, obviously, and I'm sure you know this, is to reinforce the lies by making all these asinine claims that they're making, so that the right wing disinformation machine and talk radio in this country can repeat this stuff endlessly, 24/7, border to border, coast to coast, and continue the incessant brainwashing of the American people. That Bush inherited a Clinton recession, and Bush and Cheney had to protect America, and all the other filthy, rotten lies. So, you know, I'm sure you know all this. That's the reason that's going on, right?
Yes, no doubt. But then the thing is that they tried this crap before the 2008 election. They kept trying to run it down our throats, but then the poll numbers said otherwise. He has a 25% approval rating. He thinks he's all great. I mean, you know, how will history and the people judge Bush? Not the way he wants it. In a nutshell, the truth is...
Okay.
I'm Michael from the Bronx, and I approve this message.
I know you did. Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's go to, we got time, we can squeeze in part of the call. Dan, who is calling from Franksville, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Dan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, the Warsaw Ghetto analogy was really good. I liked that earlier. But there was a guy that called up yesterday about Manifest Destiny. And I mean, the definition
Wait. I said that.
Yeah. The way you defined it, I know it didn't really fit in, but actually, if you looked at what was done on the ground with Manifest Destiny, it's almost a carbon copy. In fact, I guess Hitler studied that, and it actually works. And the people in the government in Israel must have studied. So you steal from the
well,
people.
Well,
if
I could just interrupt, I don't think anybody has to study. Our misguided principle, Manifest Destiny, that's what any religion/national attitude, it's always God that tells them to take this land or kill these people. You can go back to Exodus in the Bible. And a lot of scholars would tell you that Exodus, in addition to introducing the world to the Jewish God, Yahweh, it is also a history of the Jewish people. Go back to Exodus and read about what God ordered Joshua to do as Joshua is about to cross over the River Jordan and establish the nation of Israel. He was instructed by God to murder everyone, all the Canaanites, the men, the women, the children, the babies. So what is happening in Gaza, what happened in the United States, what has happened any time you combine fascist nationalism with religion, is you can trace it back, if you like, to Exodus. And don't forget that Christians, Jews, and Arabs, or Muslims, all claim Abraham as their progenitor. That's where all three of these very evil religions have come from. And I say evil because they are not concerned, these religions, with the redemption of humankind, I don't mean redemption in the great by and by, I mean the redemption for the crimes that we commit on a daily basis. They're not concerned with peace and justice. They're not concerned with love. They're concerned with hatred, division, lies, deceit, and murder. Got to leave it there. Thanks, Dan. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, there's a shadow hanging over me. I'm not half the man I used to be. Oh, yesterday came suddenly.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right, back to some phone calls here. Let me see. Where are we? There we go. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California.
Senor Malloy.
You're listening on KTLK tonight?
Yes, I am. I'm listening on KTLK. Surprise, surprise. since this is the first time that I'm speaking to you in this particular year, first of all, because we're still living without our Fourth Amendment rights, and since we're still living with illegal wiretapping, posse comitatus, and something which is called the 100-mile constitution-free zones.
You're gonna speak to us tonight in pig Latin.
No. I just feel compelled to wish you a police año nuevo.
Of what?
A police año nuevo, as opposed to a police año nuevo. Sorry, I was trying to be like your clever guy in Brooklyn that just called with the sound effects. It almost sounded like I was on the Stephanie Miller show.
Yeah, it almost did.
Yeah. Regarding what is going on in Gaza right now, I am, you know, Brian Williams, what you indicated tonight, what Brian Williams was saying, and the dispassion by which the American and the corporate media around the world, because I've been hearing instances of this in other countries' journalism as well. But Al Jazeera English, I know that you've talked about them before. I've been since, the outbreak began in the beginning of the year. Uh-huh. I switched over. I'm on a service which is called Live Station. For those who can't get it on their cable systems or just don't watch television, Al Jazeera itself, Al Jazeera English, has a website. And you can just click on right there, and you can see it absolutely free. You can see everything.
What's the website?
Al Jazeera English.
Oh, it's just aljazeeraenglish.com?
Yes.
Okay.
Or you can sign up for something which is called Live Station, which offers Al Jazeera English, and it offers many other channels absolutely free. And the quality is excellent. So right away, you'll be able to see all of the carnage, everything that is going on, because they have people, they have reporters and live cameras showing you exactly what is going on. So when the art, and I have tried desperately to remain neutral on this, to maintain some sort of just a journalistic viewpoint to this, but it's difficult to watch all of the carnage. It is difficult to watch when people like Mark Garlasco, who is the human representative of Human Rights Watch, discussing how the white phosphorus bombs are being used. It's difficult. It is very painful to watch people as they're being shuffled into the hospitals with burns all over their faces, their arms, their bodies, who are victims of the carnage going on there. It's difficult to say when they're interviewing the Al Jazeera interviews, like military representatives of the IDF, and they're saying, "Oh, there's no human rights violations going on," but then they have the blockade going on, and they're not allowing the UN the medical supplies to go in. And when they do, they're shot at. Even despite the fact that the UN is coordinating these things through the Israeli military, they still shoot at them. So, you know, it's so hard.
Well, and beyond that, Sanchez, I don't mean to interrupt, but beyond that, ever since the end of the 67 war, when the Israelis occupied Palestinian territory, whether it is in the West Bank or Gaza, is rather immaterial. Ever since that time, which is what, 42 years, the violations of the Geneva Conventions, the Fourth Geneva Convention concerning the treatment of civilians in an occupied territory or state, such as us in Iraq, Israel in in Palestine, those violations are ongoing. They're hour by hour. They're day by day. If somebody had kept track of the daily violations of the Fourth Geneva Convention, after 42 years, please. I mean, the list would circle the earth a couple of times. So it's almost, you know, like, who was it that Stalin that said, one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic? Somebody said that. The idea that the ongoing violations, whether they're committed by the United States in our various atrocities around the planet, or Israel in Palestine, those atrocities have become, God help me for saying this, so commonplace, so almost inconsequential. I mean, who thinks about it?
Nobody.
Nobody apparently. You know, even people in the Arab world, the Palestinians have been abandoned even by them.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. What are the Palestinian people? What are they? Are they ghosts? Are they spooks, spirits? Do they not exist? Are they ectoplasm? Are they not real people? Do they not have real children? Do they not have real houses and real ideas and dreams? They have been refugees for 60 years. And I, every once in a while I get an email from someone who is an apologist for the Zionist treatment of people in Palestine. They say, well, the Palestinians could have gone to Jordan. Oh, okay. I guess that's true. Or they could have gone to Sweden. Or they could have gone to Arizona. It is so crushing to me, this entire issue. And like I said before, I've been emotionally as well as historically involved in this since the first Intifada back in the back in 84.
Yep.
So I need to say this. It's not about me. It has nothing to do with me. I'm only talking about my little heart and soul and emotional state that continues to see the Palestinian people treated as though they're spirits or haints or spooks or some sort of invisible beings. That's all.
One thing on both sides is right now is that you have another generation. I'll give you a graphic example here, but you have another generation of people, of children and young adults who are being hardwired again, another generation to yes. automatically fight against each other. I was watching Al Jazeera in English yesterday, and they had an interview with an English teacher living in Jabalia, which is the little town just north of Gaza. And he's, as I said, he's an English teacher.
North of Gaza City or outside?
Yes, in Gaza City, yes.
Okay.
Okay. And Jabalia, he's there at home now because obviously the schools are closed. But the one thing that he was saying to the reporters was that now his kids are playing war games in his living room. He has a 7-year-old, he has a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And the little 3-year-old girl, what they were doing is, because they're watching these pictures when they can get television, they're watching the pictures of the Palestinian victims being brought in by stretchers into the hospital. So his children are now playing a game called War Victims, where they're carrying the little 3-year-old girl via a blanket, and they're rushing her back and forth in the house as if, again, they're already silly. They're already playing the game. They're already playing the roles. These people are being hardwired on both sides. There are Jews for Peace. There was a demonstration being held today in Los Angeles in the Wilshire district. We have the Israeli consulate, and there was a shutdown of the Israeli consulate. There were 10 Jews, I believe they were from Jews for Peace. I'm trying to look for that information here, but they chained themselves together to block the driveway and the entrance to the Israeli consulate. And there was a vigil again tonight in front of the federal building again for peace. I think, as most Americans feel, we want peace in the Middle East. My question I have been asking for weeks now is, what is the solution? How can we bring both sides together? Because, again, in Israel itself, and these people aren't getting any coverage in the Israeli press. They're only getting it on Al Jazeera. There are people on both sides reaching out to try and find a solution. So, you know, my question has been for weeks now, what is the solution?
Well, apparently there is none. You know, let us not be naive here on any level. Well, we can all agree that the Palestinians and a lot of Jews in Israel understand completely what the establishment of the State of Israel was. It was a complete upheaval and dismemberment of the people of the Palestinians from what they considered to be their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any difference what anyone else considers. That's what they considered. So, and the Hamas is a religious organization. It is not like Fatah. It is not like Hezbollah. This is a religious organization that has made the claim that Jews are descendants. Some Jews are descendants of apes and pigs. This is a religious insanity, much like any religious insanity that you find any place on earth. It just so happens that when you combine religious insanities in a place like Israel, Palestine, the result is murder and mayhem and chaos, all sanctified, of course, by God. You know what I'm saying? Sanchez, I got to leave it there, okay?
Pray for peace in the Middle East.
There you go. Thanks a lot.
From me, I know it's true. Oh, so true. 'Cause I saw it on TV. I know it's true. Oh, so true. 'Cause I saw it.
It's about 10 before the hour, excuse me. Thanks to our engineer, Ian Huff, who also answered your calls. Our technical advisors, Ben Birch, military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. The ethics advisors for this program are Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf. Bruce Enberg is our economic advisor, and the executive producer is Catherine Day. Back to your phone calls. Amina, excuse me, or Amena, calling from Arizona, listening on the Internet. Amena, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you this evening? Thank you for taking my call. I always send you emails and tell you to calm down every now and then.
Yes, you do. Is it Amina or Amena?
Amina.
Amina. Okay.
Yes. I'm out in Arizona.
You've sent me a couple emails tonight.
Yes. Yes, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. And I hear you. I really do hear you. Again, I am a Muslim, number one, and I hate what is going on in the Middle East, and I hate the fact that everybody else is quiet about it, even the Arabs included, and you're right. I look at them and I think, I'm a mother of two, and I would hate to be in a situation where I cannot go out and get food for my children because I'm afraid that I'll come back and my kids are gone or I'm gone. I'm not going to be available for them. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who live in Chicago who are originally from Palestine,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I know of a gentleman who's actually moved pretty much half of his family to the U.S., but is that the solution to the problem? I think what we need to do is figure out and have a system in place. You know, a very dear friend of mine told me once that when you lock somebody out from the rest of the world and they keep knocking at your door and asking you for food, the next time what they do is they'll crush your door,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
So we need to find a way whereby we can love each other when we look at each other's eyes. Feel for the children, you know, feel for the mothers and the elderly. If men, I've always said this, if men want to prove to each other that they have the muscle, you can all go out into the desert and fight and kill yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with that. You can go deal with it outside. But don't involve mothers, children, and the elderly, because mm-hmm. they're the ones who suffer because they're the weaker ones.
Right. I understand.
You know? So, yes, it's painful. And I'm not going to just say just because I'm Muslim I'm biased on this. No, I have to look at the other side too. And we need to find ways and means to bring this to an end. And the whole world needs to come in and say, hey, this has to stop. We're not going to accommodate this behavior. Bush just says go ahead and kill because that's what he believes in.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many of us who are peaceful, you know, who want to see resolution. We just don't want to see what's going on, and the Arabs need to step up. I don't understand how Cheney can have his headquarters out of Dubai, yet he is okay with what's going on in the Middle East. Kick him out.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you let him come to your country?
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell him to go and solve these things out.
But the business of Dubai is not Islam. The business of Dubai is business. And Cheney represents a direct connection to money flow, capital flow around this planet, and let's be honest, Dubai is not about anything except capital.
I do not disagree, but look, how long are we going to die just because we're looking for money? Can't we for once just stop and say, look?
I wish.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, is it always about money? Can we just say, you know, there's humanity here? I mean, I'm originally from Africa, and yes, I'm from Somalia, where the war was crazy, and I came here, and I'm grateful that America opened its doors for me. But I would like to see my country, you know, have some kind of governance. But we don't have that. I came here. I've worked very hard. I am doing very well with my life. I have a job. I have a home. I'm living the dream. But a lot of my people that I support who are still in Somalia because they don't have a life.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have income. So I would love to see something being done that we can solve that. But it's between Somalis. But this is a different situation. You know, Somalis need to come to terms and say, look, we're going to do something for ourselves before anybody can do anything for them. But in Palestine and Israel, we need to step up to the plate and say, we're going to stop this, and we have to figure out something. We are done with the killing.
Well, I so completely agree and have felt that for the longest time. Once I understood the issues between the Israeli Jews and the Palestinian Arabs,
mm-hmm.
once I came to an understanding, the problem in this country is very few people in this country have an understanding. And having an understanding does not mean anything other than having an understanding.
Right.
As you pointed out, there are two points of view here. One can make a decision that one of the points of view may be right and the other may be wrong and vice versa, but there are, in fact, two points of view here regarding this issue and this killing. And, I think to myself, as an American, how many issues that the United States is involved in that are involve war and death and destruction because, it as a flashpoint, what has happened and has continued to happen for 60 years in the Middle East.
Right.
So many, I'm not talking about Southeast Asia or Central America, but I'm talking about so many issues that U.S. foreign policy and the U.S. military and all sorts of negative things that the U.S. is involved in because
right.
this issue continues on forever.
True.
So it's awful. Listen,
Amina, we'll pray, and I'll pray for you. Thank you for bringing that
thanks.
To light. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Keep listening, okay?
Thanks for the call. I appreciate you checking in, Amina. Take care. We're just about out of time, so I understand we had a meeting here the other day, our little teeny staff, about how much more focus should be on the Palestinian issue. And my point of view is I can't. And if I can't walk away from that issue, I just simply can't. And if it offends you, or if you are tired of it, I understand you're not paying too much attention to this program for the time being. I do understand that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.